Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Always.
And forever.
Podcasts.
What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about a fun little piece of Americana.
Americana?
Yeah, we're going to talk about neon signs.
Neon signs?
Yeah, I felt a little bit bad about this one because I believe, what was it, Mr. Ship? Friend of the show sent us a really, really cool list of suggestions. Most of them centering around things that are like easier to find and cheaper. And my brain glommed onto the one thing none of us can afford.
Are you telling me I can't afford a neon sign?
You probably like could, but it would set you back a ways.
Aww.
You know, it was one of those things where I love neon signs. I realized I knew very little about them. And so here we go. Let's mosey on down to the strip.
Gross.
What?
No, I just have that irrational hate for the desert and also Vegas.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
Send all of your hate mail to antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
If you're a desert, or I guess like there's a desert conservationist listening, it's just like, you know what, Ken?
Someone's about to teach me how to respect canyons.
By shoving you off of one.
Oh, no.
So, the story of neon. It starts the way all good stories start, with some noble gases.
I'm just picturing, like, the periodic table of elements, but, like, somehow it's a round table of elements.
What? Oh, hold on, this is going somewhere. And?
No, because they're noble gases.
Oh.
So they're all knights of the elemental round table. Which element is King Arthur?
Let's woodshed that one.
Okay.
You
mean take it out behind the woodshed and shoot it?
Yeah. Let's old Yeller this one. So fun fact about the noble gases. This is just a thing I learned back when I thought I could study science. They're actually called that because they don't bond with ions well. And, like, they were described as standoffish. It's a delightful little fact about why they're called that. By the way, there's a lot of science that I'm just going to omit because I was never very good at, let's call it, like, gas physics. In fact, I was very bad at it and I got very confused at many, many junctures. So I kept this to the stuff that's pertinent. So we're going to cut right ahead past the discovery of noble gases by some cool dudes who discovered them. To 1857, physicist and glassblower, which absolutely the most boss combination of interests, Heinrich Geisler. He invented the Geisler tube. This was a glass tube sealed with an electrode at each end, evacuated of air and filled with the noble gas that he would then connect to an electrical current and electrify. They did this because, and I'm not screwing with you here, literally because they wanted to see what would happen when you electrified these gases. And the only way you could do that was in an airtight tube. Well, amazingly, most of the noble gases lit up when you electrified them. So everyone was like, damn, that's super cool. That's literally where that begins and ends. The Geisler tube was considered literally like Spencer Gifts.
So what you're saying is that neon signs have come full circle.
Yeah. And we just start, basically it's over, Spencer Gifts, goodbye. But yeah, they were just curiosities. They were, regardless of the fact that it started as a scientific endeavor, they didn't know what to do past that. And it was kind of difficult to make them do it. So you just had all these little glass tubes that you could be like, hey, check this out. Run a current through and it would glow and you'd be like, yeah, neat. Despite basically being an 1860s lava lamp, the Geisler tube led to a bunch of other technologies with noble gases, including cathode ray tubes, which we still use today, sodium vapor lamps, which were a lamp. They didn't stick around very long. And neon signs.
Hey.
So in 1898, William Ramsay and Morris W. Travers discovered the element neon using Geisler tubes. It emitted an incredibly bright red glow, and everyone looked at it and they were like, shit. Or, more put in better terms, in the words of William Ramsay, the blaze of crimson light from the tube told its own story and was a sight to dwell upon and never forget. I don't get the told its own story part.
It told its own story.
The story of...
It said, sit down a spell, have I got a tale for you?
It said, once upon a time. So neon was also a Spencer Gift novelty for quite some time. Because we trapped it and everyone said it was pretty, but we had no idea what to do with it.
Make it glow.
Until Georges Claude of France, if there's any question, owner of Air Liquide... Which is liquefied air.
It's just French for liquid air.
He named his company Liquid Air, and what they did is they made air into liquid.
Incredible.
So your first step is to be, it's very funny that you named your company something so on the nose. Uh-huh. I was goggling at the fact that air can be turned into a liquid.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's where, like, liquid oxygen shit comes from.
What?
Yeah.
Damn.
You're not gonna believe what I have to tell you about water vapor.
I know, what it just, it makes more sense with water. Literally have a note here that says, yo, air can be liquid? So it turns out...
That air can be liquid.
That air can be liquid, and now this show's all about that. I did look up the air liquefaction process. It's boring.
It didn't live up to the hype.
Wicca didn't. Up until now, neon was very rare. People didn't know how to generate it. Turns out, Georges Claude, owner of Air Liquide, he realized that neon was a byproduct of the air liquefaction process.
Oh, convenient.
And so he thought, what if I just did this? So, for the Paris Motor Show, he created two 39-foot-long red neon tubes to light the Grand Palais exhibition hall.
Hell yeah. And then someone immediately stepped on them and shattered them.
They were up in the air. Oh, okay. So I mean, I know this is France and anything goes, but I don't think they can do that.
I mean, it's France. They know how to throw a brick.
I was kind of expecting this to end with it. It was like, yeah, it's gonna be, it's too bright. And they just threw a fucking brick at it. But it was a hit, actually. People liked it.
Hey.
It was red, and they were like, damn, I never seen a red light before.
Roxanne.
Now.
Yes?
It won't be associated with whorehouses for a while.
Moulin Rouge?
So, Georges Claude's business partner, Jacques Fonzac, he wants to sell these as advertisement pieces because it drew so much attention at the motor show.
You can't not look at it.
Pretty much. It worked. So he started a whole secondary division in the company where they made signs out of neon. The first customer was a barber in 1912. And from there, it was all gravy, baby. French gravy.
Poutine?
Poutine. That's Canada.
French Canada.
By 1913, there was a huge advertisement for Sanzano Vermouth, followed by full neon tube lighting in the entrance hall of the Paris Opera.
Neon opera?
Neon opera. This caught on incredibly quickly. Within a year, they started collecting patents for their manufacturing discoveries, most of which are actually still used in neon production today.
Neon Opera is the name of my electro swing band.
Honestly, that sounds so dope. Either that or, like, a follow-up to Repo the Genetic Opera.
I was just gonna say,
Yeah. Great minds.
I'm never not thinking about Repo the Genetic Opera, so, yeah.
It's true. Neon comes in a little glass vial.
A little glass vial?
Neon came to America in 1923.
In a little glass vial.
In a little glass vial. Literally. A Packard dealership in L.A., for a while, the only Packard dealership in L.A. for some reason, bought two very large signs advertising the Packard business. It's setting the trend of shit looking like that for years to come. It was immediate. People were just like, I have got to see what you put in your stupid car dealership that won't be here in 5 years. Because have you ever heard of a Packard? No.
I mean, I've heard of Alfred Packard.
He's unrelated.
Okay.
I think. I know nothing about Packards. No one does, because they didn't last. Signs cost $12.50 a piece in 1920s money.
Damn.
It was recorded that people would stop and stare at the neon signs for hours, which I hope is an exaggeration.
I don't think it is, because they didn't have Netflix.
No, but they had, like, cafes.
Yeah, to sit in and stare at the neon signs.
For hours.
Yeah, you need the coffee from the cafe so you can stay awake long enough to stare at the neon sign for hours.
God.
It's like you've never played Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
A very specific get. God, I'm so excited for the new one. It was also dubbed by Americans as Liquid Fire.
I mean, no, but good try.
It's fine. Americans, they have that habit. It became really synonymous with, like, American progressivism and ideals, which is just really funny, the number of times we constantly have to concede our symbols to the French.
I mean, they did steal the idea of a revolution from us, so, you know. I also appreciate how, like, something so garish it's compelling became to symbolize America.
Well, this was at a time when it was hard to light things, period. Mm. So lights themselves were kind of like, oh, nice. So, they, you know, it looks very future.
Future.
Claude also managed to franchise his neon business at $100,000 a business, plus royalties.
Mid-20th century money.
Yeah.
Which is not remotely fucking around money.
No. And he did gangbusters with it.
Yeah, no shit!
There were over 50, which at those prices...
That's insane.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the business did die around the 1930s.
Oh.
For A, the obvious reasons, but mostly because his patents expired. And his employees left him and spread the secrets around of how the neon was made.
Whoopsies.
Oopsie doodles. Do you want to hear how neon tubes are made?
Hell yeah.
It is made by some men and women.
Good talk.
Okay. They're actually made by glass blowers, later specializing into a highly skilled crafts worker called a glass bender or tube bender, because while they were very good at what they did, they weren't very good at naming what they did.
Listen. I come from a long line of proud tube benders.
Earth, fire, air, tube water,
bender.
Tube.
Everything changed when the tube benders attacked.
Well, the tube benders had to work very closely with the fire benders, as we'll find out. So you take a 4 to 5 foot long hollow glass tube, and you heat it with various heating elements depending on the intensity of the bend, which corresponds to the intensity of the fire you need. A machine called the crossfire, which gets very hot very fast for sharp bends, and smaller flames that you pass it through multiple times for gradual, delicate bends. It is, again, highly skilled work. It's a very specific skill to have, and you have to know exactly what you're doing.
Because molten glass is not even remotely fucking around.
And not even a little bit. And there are a lot of people who still do it, which I find really remarkable. Then, phosphorescent coating is applied to the inside of the tube, filled with a purified gas. Could be neon. Doesn't have to be. The tube is ionized by high voltage through the cathodes at either end. In other lamps without actual neon, argon and mercury is added to create mercury vapor, which ends up creating very strong ultraviolet light. And then it goes, boom, and it's cool. Well, actually, it's bombarded, which, I read 3 pages of how bombardment works. It is one of the original patented methods invented originally by Claude. It's basically just getting it so hot that in a vacuum that all the gross stuff gets out. Because noble gases move in a very predictable fashion. So you just get it real, real, real hot and then put it in a vacuum and it sucks out all the garbage.
Autoclave that shit.
Honestly, I really wish someone had made a page that just said bombardment is getting it so hard the garbage goes away. Neon, as I mentioned before, and you've probably heard a million times by a bunch of smug fucks on Reddit, is actually only one of the gases present in neon lighting.
Ooh. Sorry, that's my instant response to Reddit.
Saucy. Neon's actually just used for red and orange and blends of the two.
Oh.
There is a huge host of other gases. They don't have to be noble gases anymore. They just have to be purified gases.
They're mixing with the common gases.
They are mixing with the common gases. And a lot of times those phosphorescent coatings I mentioned, called phosphors, are used to further manipulate the color. Because when ionized by the electricity, the phosphorescence also glows and mixes with the gas, create a unique color.
Mm.
This is another highly skilled thing, is knowing how to match up those to get specific colors. Then, after it has been bended into the necessary shape and electrified and filled with gas, all letters and spaces are separated out through blacking, which is when you just paint over the bends that aren't letters, so that it looks like letters are all separate.
Oh.
Yeah, very clever. Paint might be applied for color effect. It's hooked up to its electrical source and is ready to draw customers in.
Aha.
It's a really intense process. I'm really fascinated by it. The oldest surviving neon sign in America is a theater sign from the Lake Worth Playhouse in Lake Worth, Florida. That dates back to 1929.
Damn.
Yeah, sadly, a lot of the earlier ones were destroyed. Because they're made of glass.
I was gonna say, they seem volatile.
The golden age for neon in America was the 1940s and the 1950s. This was largely because neon did very well from our newly implemented highways.
Oh.
In the 40s and 50s, highways, Route 66 and all of that, became really integral to the way America was moving. And neon was so bright and attractive that it looked really good on the highway. And it was a really great way to draw people into your business. That's why a lot of them are cafes, bars, and hotels. Once America adopted this like weird roadside culture, neon became the thing. And it was very emblematic of like futurism and moving forward and like clean and classy. There was a time when neon was classy.
I was gonna say.
Which blows my mind. It's so hard to imagine. I mean, I love neon. Like, no joke. I adore neon signs. But eventually, after tastes changed, they got affiliated with, let's call it, the seedy underbelly of America. Famously, the guy who operates the largest collection of neon signs was actually a bender who designed the girls, girls, girls sign. People fought him on that pretty hard. Another reason neon went away? Because of changing municipal codes for signage.
You're not allowed to have a sign that can be seen from space anymore?
Pretty much, yeah. They were big and too colorful and too bright, and everyone's design tastes had changed, and nobody wanted it anymore.
They also wanted to be able to sleep at night within the same postcode.
Overrated. Overrated. Yeah, but that, basically. And also, cheaper methods of signage had already come through. Lighting was becoming easier, cheaper, and more effective. So, and plastics were being developed. So you could have a plastic sign that was painted that had a light in it. It wasn't even half the cost. We were entering disposability culture, sadly.
Oh, we were already there.
Mass production became better and easier. In the early 1940s, there were actually over 2,000 neon sign companies employing over 5,000 tube benders.
Damn.
This slide away from the styling and design of the neon is actually what made it become associated with loose morals. These businesses that were holding on to this outdated, garish signage that people had rejected made everyone go, ah, that's where the bad people go. Except for bars. Bars held on to neon the whole time because neon just looks good in a low-light environment. And so that's why pretty much I'm gonna go out on a limb and say half of all the neon signs you encounter are going to be beer signs. So now that you know all about neon, you want some?
Sure.
You want some neon?
Hell yeah.
Get your wallet out.
No.
It's expensive.
My money.
You can't have your money no more. It belongs to neon.
Oh.
And my new name is Neon. So collecting neon signs.
Yes.
The piece de resistance, to use a phrase from its mother country, are largely custom signs. The closer to custom, the better. Of course, custom signs tend to be older, because we're talking about a time before corporations had destroyed all our lives.
Whoopsies.
Oops. Capitalism. Anyway, yeah, custom signs, always better. The other things you want to look at are subject matter, and the later you go, you're looking at certain kinds of brands. Of course, brands that no longer exist are some of the best ones. I was going to say Lucky Strikes, but that's absolutely still a brand. Sinclair Petrol. It had a pretty brief run as a company, and also the fact that it's got a dinosaur on it just makes it very, very collectible. So you're looking at, like, those are top grade. Underneath that, you get, again, specific businesses, like smaller franchises. References to food are very popular. And then you just kind of move down the line to the word hotel, the word open, the word cafe. Again, these are still in the thousands range, depending on how old they are. But they're less valuable than, say, the mobile sign that has the Pegasus. Because again, that's you're talking subject matter is important. Just mobile is going to be worth less than actually the horse.
It's a dope horse.
Such a dope horse. Such a cool... God, I don't know why it hasn't belonged to... I would literally kill for that horse.
Me, we all would.
I wish it were my logo.
It can be.
Antiques Freaks is now literally just the mobile logo.
We'll just take the fucking Pegasus and, like, make it black and give it, like, glowing red eyes. We're done.
Oh, that's so good.
We're fucking done here.
Oh, that's so dope. I want that on a shirt.
I'm a graphic designer.
Please email us if you want Antiques Freak shirts that just have a goth Pegasus on them.
Email us if you want us to get sued. By mobile.
No, but it's goth.
Oh, okay.
It was goths. It's a different.
It's completely different, TM,
it's completely different. Also, I'll trace it. So, like, I did it.
That's what tracing means.
Yeah. So, like, naturally, you might assume the farther away from mass-produced it is, the better. This is one of those things where newer pieces are actually just as valuable. 60s and 70s, they still have a high kitsch value, let's say. Most of those are going to be bar and beer-related. We're going to have a whole separate episode about bar and beer stuff. They're very, very popular. Again, based kind of on Budweiser, not so much. Everyone has those. But I think Yuengling is actually a very popular brand of neon to collect. You may have grokked from my description of how it is made that condition is everything because these things are very hard to repair.
And incredibly fragile in the first place.
That's definitely a feather in the hat as to their value. is definitely one of those antiques where it's like, I'm amazed that this is still here. It's like paper goods. It's like, wait, holy shit, what? But they're very hard to repair. Damage, let me clarify, damage to the tubes themselves is very hard to repair. Mm-hmm. A lot of the damage actually happens to the transformer, which is very, I'm not going to say easy because that's very insulting to electrical engineers.
But easier than the glass tube itself?
Exactly. And also, getting the transformer repaired doesn't change the value the way getting the tubes repaired would. Although, I found a lot of discourse on the subject of whether or not getting the tubes repairs did change the value. Given that these things have one function and that function is their only appeal, again, it's debatable, getting it repaired might actually just restore its value, the way restoration was always intended to. Other things to consider when you're shopping around for your neon signs are, is it double-sided? Does it hang, or is it wall-mounted? And how big is it? Large, wall-sized ones easily start going for about 50,000. Fuck! A lot of people have mentioned that these are better investments than art at this point. Their value has only gone up and rapidly, and it shows no sign of stopping. So, you know, invest in my new cryptocurrency, Neon Lamp, where you think you're buying a neon lamp, but you're really just giving me money.
I mean, I guess that's how cryptocurrencies work.
This is another rare one because well-made repros are not necessarily undesirable.
Oh.
When I say well-made repro, I'm talking about a repro made by an artisan glassbender.
So a repro that takes just as much work to make as the original?
Yeah, they are obviously not worth as much as an old one, but they are a very valued art form. And a lot of people will shell out for it if you got one.
Damn.
It's very unique in that. I was really surprised to find out that people are totally cool with repros. As long as you're not marketing them as something else. If you are into this and now bummed out by the numbers I threw out here, neon clocks are actually a great way to cut your teeth on this. They tend to be smaller, obv, and their values tend to range from 50s to the high hundreds, depending on subject matter.
Damn.
So yeah, neon clocks are a great fun way to introduce neon into your vintage collection.
Yeah, this isn't just your clock bias talking?
It's absolutely my clock bias talking. My parting, and this one is, I'm gonna fucking fully with you, based on experience, please be careful. There is no way to know how these are wired. The transformers are all enclosed. So if someone has done a patch job or tried to repair the transformer and didn't know what they were doing, or it's just broken and you weren't aware, you will get electrocuted.
Oopsies.
Don't ask me how I know that. How many of my PSAs end with, like, yes, I have been electrocuted? Yes, it was clock related. But please, please, please be careful. Wear something grounding when you're testing these things. Make sure the wire itself is grounded. Get some rubber gloves. They're like $2. Please. These things, they pack a huge electrical punch. I'm very lucky to not be dead. And that's it.
Woo!
I think neon is super cool. I love neon. I want to see its resurgence. And sorry, Ken, I really liked Las Vegas.
But how long... can it go before it burns away?
Actually, a really long time. It's funny you should mention that.
John Mayer.
I knew you were referencing John Mayer. I know. But it's funny you should bring that up. It's famously very long-lived.
Damn.
Like, up to, I believe there is a specimen that's been running for about 30 years now.
Fuck.
Yeah. A finely crafted one will last a long time. So, sorry I ruined your John Mayer joke, but...
my incredible pinnacle of human humor... John Mayer joke.
Which is pointing out that John Mayer wrote a song called Neon.
Yes. My Netflix special comes out next week.
Oh, thank God. You just get on stage and you say, talk about something, and then you introduce a John Mayer song that's tangentially related.
Yes. It runs for 2 hours.
Dude, honestly, God, I would pay fucking $100 for tickets to that show. I'm not even joking with you. That would be so good.
Do you have any sources?
Yes.
Okay.
My sources include ThoughtCo.com, History of Neon Signs, ScienceHistory.org, A Blaze of Crimson Light, The Story of Neon, which is my favorite. If you're into this, please check it out. If you're into sign collecting, check out the book Picker's Pocket Guide to Signs.
Hey.
It's broad. It also covers enameled porcelain signs, which we'll also do an episode on, and pretty much all kinds of signs. How to Spend It, neon.ft.com, which is a great name for a website about expensive things, collecting vintage neon signs. And the Neon Sign Guy blog, which, holy shit, what a gem. It is a blog kept by a glass bender, who is currently still operating with his own shop. Wow, that's a guy who loves his job. It is very charming and very great insight into neon. Please check out the neonsignguyblog.com.
If you would like to talk more about neon signs, you can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join our group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
And show me your favorite neon signs.
Yeah. We also have an Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, and there you can find a wide variety of vintage goods and t-shirts and stickers.
Please check out my Standards of American Perfection book on chickens. It is how to find the perfect chicken. Turns out, while I was posting it, I found out it's actually a very scarce copy.
Whoopsies.
So you could have that. It's full of beautiful illustrations of chickens and guides to how to make your chickens perfect.
The perfect chicken is within your grasp.
It's killing me to separate it, but I dragged it out of a box of like literally 50 books, so help.
We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where you can listen to deleted scenes and join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month. Special shout out to our current patrons for keeping the podcast lights on and getting us ever closer to a second microphone. And thank you for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye.